introduce yourself, please.
Sure. John Carpenter. I represent the 15th District in the Missouri State Legislature. That's up in Clay County, all of the city of Gladstone, and part of the Kansas City Northland.
Very good. We're glad you're here. Let's get started.
This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go. And welcome to the production studio here at KCUR 89.3. I am Brian Ellison. It is good to have John Carpenter, a Democrat from Gladstone, with us. We are also joined by my friend, the award-winning journalist, writer, and all-around friend of Statehouse Blend, Barb Shelley. Welcome, Barb.
Welcome, Brian, and thanks for having me.
Well, we're always glad to have you. We have a lot to talk about this week. The Missouri House and Senate have now passed a state budget, which gives us some a good glimpse into what the next year or two in the state might look like. But there's a lot of other legislation pending, too. So we'll talk about some of that this week and what it's like to serve in the legislature as one of the top Democrats. But first, we always ask you to tell us about your kids and your pets, if you have any, your family and your pets.
Well, I don't have any kids. I have a wife, Midori.
Okay. All right.
She's wonderful. She and I actually met in high school and went to college together after high school out in California at USC. And have been together ever since, been married for 5.5 years. And we have two cats.
Two cats. What are their names?
We have Jelly Beans the cat.
Jelly Beans the cat.
That's right.
Is the full name.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
Okay.
And then Suki, S-U-K-I.
All right.
Yeah.
Is that a significant?
So my wife is Japanese, and Suki means, I think, love in Japanese, or has some meaning. I'd have to.
All right.
Look back.
We won't hold you to that.
Okay. Very good.
How did you get involved in politics in the first place? Because you've kind of been in this from almost right out of college, right?
I first got interested in policy in high school, doing high school debate. That, you know, sort of forces you to take positions on issues, and over time you sort of develop, you know, where you actually are on issues. And in college, got involved with the College Democrats out of USC, and led that organization for a couple of years, and just really enjoyed it, and jumped back into politics when I got back to Missouri.
You spent a little time working for Dianne Feinstein, I've seen in your
that's
bio.
Right. That's right.
So,
the good senator, yes.
From California. So let's start with Barb and see what's on her mind this week.
Yeah, well, I guess I'll just cut right to the chase and go to the big topic, Senate Joint Resolution 39.
That's right.
And, of course, that's the, you know, the intended constitutional amendment that appears to allow some business owners to cite religious objections for denying services to same-sex couples. And I'm wondering how you feel about that, and where you think it is at this point.
Yeah, so I'm pretty strongly opposed. I think as far as I know, every Democrat in the legislature is as well. You know, I just don't think that it is in any way helpful to our state or the people of the state to add to the state constitution a provision which legalizes certain forms of discrimination. Hopefully, the state legislature will think better of this in the next 3 weeks.
Well, just to play devil's advocate here, I mean, you know, what's wrong with, you know, it's a big topic right now. What's wrong with putting it on the ballot and letting Missourians decide?
Yeah, it's a fascinating, every now and then you'll hear this from proponents of various causes. Well, just let let the people vote. So first, I don't think you should take something like people's constitutional rights and put that up for a popular vote. You know, I think if you did that on issues throughout history, the popular vote might have gone one way. That doesn't mean that it was the right thing to do. Doesn't mean it should have been up to a popular vote.
Okay.
And the other thing I would say, too, is this is an embarrassing thing for the state. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to hold an election in August or November, now we're talking about months of embarrassment for the state. And I think just the campaign, I think it would lose on the ballot. So I think SJR 39 is not going to go into the state constitution, but my concern is even the campaign will do damage to our state.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to give the other side its due, though, here. I mean, they would say that this is a real religious freedom issue, that there are rights that need to be protected, and that's the right of business owners to not participate in something like a same-sex wedding, that business owners need that protection. They need to not be sued, not be threatened with legal action. Doesn't that seem fair?
I think it's fair that if a business owner chooses not to participate, that he or she can find a discreet way to do so. I don't think what you need to do is go to the state constitution, which historically has protected rights of everyone, and say that it is now legal for a business owner to, for example, put up a sign in the window that says, no gays allowed. And that is essentially what SJR 39 would do. So I think in the real world, where this has not, frankly, been an issue, we haven't had a single lawsuit on this in the state of Missouri, and proponents of SJR 39 haven't been able to demonstrate one person who's been harmed by this. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty clear that there are ways to go forward that don't involve amending the Constitution to do this.
So, John, I you know what you said about the long debate and campaign. If this gets on the ballot, I hear that too, and I hear that, you know, like the NCA and other groups are saying, don't let that happen. You know, we don't want to get mixed up in something like that. So, where is the legislature right now? The committee postponed a vote this week, right?
That's right. Yeah. So, and the best sense I have of as to why mm-hmm. that's the case is because there, you know, the votes for it might not mm-hmm. be there, and that's just, in my view, good news. So, you know, the bill has to get through two committees before it will mm-hmm. go to the House floor for a vote.
Do you think it would pass on the House floor?
Well, I really don't know, because mm-hmm. I think what we're seeing in the first committee is that between unified Democratic opposition and then a handful of Republican members, too, that might be enough to stop this. And part of the reason for that is, like you said, mm-hmm. I mean, you've got really big business opposition to SJR 39 because of the tens of millions of dollars of damage that it could do mm-hmm. to the state in terms of lost revenue. So,
can I push on this a little bit?
Yeah.
Do you know of Republicans who are prepared to actually vote no?
I do,
and will do so if it comes to that.
Yes. Now, you know, the question is, and that's why it hasn't gotten voted out of committee yet. Is there are at least two or three or four Republicans on that committee who are hesitant or outright opposed. And yeah, I think in the total body right now, there are probably 30 or so.
That's the House Emerging Issues Committee where it's currently sitting.
That's right. And for after that, it has to go to the General Laws Committee, which I happen to be on. So
you're the ranking Democrat on that committee, right?
I am. So if it happens to get there, we're going to have the fight at that level, too.
All right. Well, we'll be keeping an eye on for that. Only 3 weeks left in the session, so this all has to come to a head here pretty soon.
Yes. Yeah, so that's, 3 weeks to run out the clock, and we can figure this out.
Well, let's talk about some of the other things on that agenda for the 3 weeks that are left. And actually, before that even, let's talk about this week just passed when the House did approve a budget. The one constitutional requirement for the General Assembly each year is to pass a budget. They've done it. They did it early, ahead of deadline, as they did last year. What's your assessment? Did they do a good job?
Yeah, you know, I think the budget is okay. My concern with it is a concern I've had since I've been in Jefferson City, which is, you know, we continue to eat away at state revenue by doing special tax breaks for this group, for that group. And unfortunately, over the years, those have added up in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And we find it very difficult to fully fund things that need to be funded. And so, you know, I think with the limited resources we have, we did okay. But certainly we continue by hundreds of millions of dollars to underfund education and roads and bridges and everything else. And the reason for that is pretty easily tied to some of the revenue losses that we've experienced.
So among the things that happened this week, the House approved changing the education funding formula. So for years, the state has sent less money to education than the legally established guidelines required. this year they just changed the guidelines. But Republican leaders said that was appropriate, that those guidelines were from a different time. Is that how you saw it?
No. That has been one of the more humorous but also frustrating things that we've done recently. The idea that because we've underfunded the state foundation formula by $500 million, that the way to solve that issue instead of finding more funds for schools is instead to rewrite the formula so that now we're fully funding it. I think people are smart enough to see, if the Republican majority wants to claim, aha, we've done it, we're fully funding education in Missouri, I think people are smart enough to see you through that.
Well, we have a little bit of audio from this week. State Representative Judy Morgan, your Kansas City area colleague on Democratic side, former guest here on State House Blend, and former teacher and head of an education union herself. She had this to say about that change in the funding formula.
The education bill has been underfunded since, I think, about 2008 or 2009. So basically, we have not been putting the money into it that we have said we should. And now the legislature just wants to say, okay, we're just going to give up and we're just going to set a lower standard.
Does that seem right to you, John Carpenter?
That is right. Judy is a very smart person and, as usual, has gotten it correct.
Aren't you kind of flirting with legal action by doing that? Has that come up at all?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think this is a state statute, so I think we, as far as I know, we have the ability to do it. I think it's a disappointing move, though. The state legislature, which, by the way, was controlled by Republicans back in 2005, said, look, this is the number of dollars we need to fully fund education in the state. The Republican legislature passed it in 2005, and ever since has been underfunding their own formula by hundreds of millions of dollars. So, again, I think to come back now and rewrite it to where now we are spending enough, I think people get it.
A lot of the attention has been on higher education funding as well, the University of Missouri budget. The House wanted to cut $8 million from central administration. The Senate wanted to cut only $1 million. The conference committee came out, kind of met in the middle, just under $4 million cut from central administration. They've been very open about the fact that the purpose of this cut is to send a message over their dissatisfaction with the way the university's handled various crises over the past year. Do you, as a Democrat in leadership in the House, share any of that displeasure in how higher education in Missouri is going?
I think obviously the UM system has some work to do in terms of how it addresses campus unrest. So, there are students with real grievances that need to be listened to, and hopefully what's happened over the last year is going to be a wake-up call for folks running the show over there. But I gotta tell you, the idea that the way to solve those issues is by cutting millions of dollars out of higher education in Missouri is, to me, clearly wrong and a sad direction for us to go as a state. One of the things I've pointed out is that if you go back to the year 2000, we were spending $200 million more inflation adjusted than we do today to our higher education institutions. And the result of spending $200 million less than we were at the turn of the century is pretty obvious, right? Students are paying a lot more to get a college education in this state. And, doing what we did this week just takes us further in that direction.
There's another element of the budget that you've publicly talked about, which is the funding for Planned Parenthood. In this final version of the budget, approved by both the House and the Senate now, there is no funding. No Medicaid funding is allowed to go to Planned Parenthood, including to services other than abortion. How do you feel about that? It's been a topic of plenty of conversation, but Senator Jason Holzman actually in the debate on the Senate side this week said he thinks there will actually be more abortions as a result because the funding for contraception and women's health programs is going to be gone.
What I do know is that, the vast majority of what Planned Parenthood does is are women health services. And, one of the things I did during debate over this was just read a couple quotes from Donald Trump, who has said glowing things about Planned Parenthood in the last couple of months.
You asked on the floor why the Missouri government should get to the right of Donald Trump on this
issue. Well, that's right. I just think obviously he is the choice of Republican voters out there. He's going to be their nominee and has, on a lot of things, been a pretty extreme candidate. And even he sees that there is some value in Planned Parenthood. So, you know, I think we ought to, on this one, take the Donald's advice and not cut their funding.
There you go. John Carpenter supports Donald Trump. You heard it here on State House Blend.
We made news. Did you vote for all of the budget bills?
No. I voted against most of them.
Just curious. Okay.
Yeah.
Barb, let's go back to you. What else are you wondering today?
Yeah, well, you mentioned all these tax breaks and everything. And I remember listening to you a couple years ago making a very persuasive argument on the House floor against, a pretty drastic income tax cut, and especially one that would give quite a big break to these so-called pass-through businesses. But then the legislature did pass that kind of legislation, although it was more moderate, the bill they passed, than what was originally proposed. And now we have all this drama going on in Kansas with their budget and the pass-through businesses. So I was hoping you could maybe update us on where Missouri is, because a tax break is supposed to kick in pretty quickly now, isn't it?
That's right. So the good news, on the one hand, is you're correct. What we passed in Missouri, although it was a step in the wrong direction, wasn't as immediate or as drastic as what happened in Kansas. But nevertheless, it is a $600 million tax giveaway that is overwhelmingly geared toward high-earning individuals in the state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the average person gets something like a $40 or $50 tax cut, the average taxpayer. So
you buy some donuts with that $40
right,
that's
right, which we support here at State right. House Blend.
So of the of the $600 million, you know, most of those dollars go to folks who are already earning a lot. And, you know, when you're underfunding roads and bridges by a few hundred million, when you're underfunding funding education by $500 million, the idea that you're going to further eat away at your revenue base by another $600 million is unfortunate. But you're right, it is a little more gradual. So over the next 5 years, it'll be phased in. It's a five-year phase-in.
Do you see any merit to the argument that by lowering taxes on these kinds of businesses, sole proprietorships, partnerships, LLCs, that you create jobs? It's a jobs engine for a state.
Well, there's no way that you could think that. So if you're a
business... But that's the argument. Lots of people think that.
Well,
yeah.
the Republican majority of both the House and the Senate have made that argument.
Right. So in Kansas, for example, Kansas has had, I think, zero net job growth over the last year, whereas Missouri has had, you know, substantially higher. Mm-hmm. So the idea, and our tax cuts haven't kicked in yet. So the idea that if you pass tax cuts, you're going to take all the jobs from the states that don't pass tax cuts. I think you have two states over the last couple of years.
But you yourself would benefit from this kind of legislation, right? Because you own one of these businesses.
Sure.
Would you
right.
be creating right. jobs with that's your it. Tax break?
Well, and that's exactly the point. So, you know, if you earned, let's say, $100,000worth of taxable income through your business, so, you know, that's your... Mm-hmm. After all your deductions, you earn $100,000. You'd be making a lot of money, right?
Mm-hmm.
So at the current 6% tax rate, you'd be paying $6,000 in taxes to the state of Missouri. We gave you a 25% tax cut as a business owner after it's fully phased in. So 25% of $6,000 is $1,500?
Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. So you are given a $1,500 tax cut. Are you going to go hire a bunch of new employees with your $1,500 tax cut?
Probably not anybody you want to have working for you.
No, I don't think you're going to. Yeah. I don't think you're going to hire a lot of employees. What you're going to do is maybe take your trip to Jamaica and, you know, have an extra $1,500 to spend there. So it just it's difficult to imagine what the thought process is that would lead people to conclude that this is a big job creator. What it does do when you give $1,500 tax breaks to people who are making a good income is it depletes state revenue to the point where we can't fully fund basic state services. And you know, unfortunately, that's already where we're at before the tax cuts have gone into effect. We're already at a place. And that's actually one thing that I hate to agree with another Republican, but you know, Sam Brownback will often complain about about how the media has been picking on Kansas and, you know, sort of exaggerating the budget woes over there. And I think he's wrong in the sense that it is a pretty bad situation there. But where he's correct is if you compare state tax revenues into the state of Kansas compared to the state of Missouri, the state of Kansas still, even after these tax cuts, collects more dollars per capita than Missouri does. So we were so far behind Kansas in terms of funding to the state that now we are better acclimated to it, right? Our paradigm was already that we were so underfunding things. You know, they were doing a much better job of funding their schools and their colleges and universities.
Yes, that's right.
But even after their massive tax cuts, they still collect more dollars per person than we do in Missouri. And so that just tells you something about for how long Missouri has been struggling to fully fund basic state services, and that problem continues.
Well, Missouri gives away a heck of a lot of money in tax credits, or forfeits a lot of money in tax credits. Did you pass any more of those this session?
Well, no big expansions on tax credits this year, which is good. You're right. That's another $700 million a year that that we lose to the state. That's right.
Okay. So I think all of this sort of begs the question, from your standpoint as a Democrat, why this keeps happening. So, I mean, you've been in the legislature now for years. You're in the leadership of the Democratic caucus in the House. Frankly, you obviously were recruited to run for this position. You seem to have unlimited potential, but you're serving in a super minority caucus, and there's a lot of uncertainty about the future of the party in the state, where the leadership is going to come from for the next generation of statewide offices. How do you see this all changing? Year after year of defeats, no particular changes in districting that suggest any change in that outcome. What of the future of Democrats in Missouri?
Well, I'm hopeful, especially in a year like 2016. You know, I think we've got the right message. I think we've got to do a better job of getting it out there. But in a year like this, where, you know, you sort of joked earlier about endorsing
Donald Trump.
And I've actually long endorsed Donald Trump to be the Republican nominee. I think that's exactly what my friends in the Republican Party ought to do, and it looks like they are, in fact, going to do it. And I think him being the nominee opens up a very big opportunity for Democrats, not only in Missouri but across the country, to hopefully do well on Election Day in November. If we can't take advantage of the craziness, really, that's happening federally, and say, look, we offer a reasonable alternative to Donald Trump politics. If we can't make that case this year, then you're right. Then I think you should say after November of this year that that the Democratic Party in Missouri is going to be struggling for a long time to come.
Is the Democratic Party in Missouri organized at the state level to help candidates in what could be closely contested districts?
Well, yeah, that's my question too. I mean, is that really the only hope that the Republicans nominate the kind of nominee that creates such negative coattails that happens to sweep a few more Democrats into state rep seats?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say it's the only hope, but where I think you're correct is, you know, year after year we keep losing more seats, right? So if I'm trying to look for a big game changer, do I think there's a big game changer in terms of are we, you know, that much better organized? I'm not sure that's the case, but we do have a good Democratic candidate running for governor in Chris Koster. I think he's made this a priority in terms of doing well politically in the state. So I think between a pretty good campaign there, you know, Jason Kander is going to lead a good campaign for the U.S. Senate. And I do frankly think that what's happening with the Republican nomination really ought to help us out, because either, frankly, it's going to be Donald Trump as the nominee for president, and he is the most ridiculous person to run for president in generations, maybe ever. I mean, certainly in decades. And it's either going to be him or he's going to go to the convention with the most votes by far. And the Republican establishment is going to give the nomination to someone else, despite the fact that Donald has millions of more votes than any other candidate. And either scenario, I think, is a pretty bad one for the Republican Party.
Yeah, I guess I want to ask you about this, though. I mean, Donald Trump, like him or not, has garnered a terrific amount of support from a demographic that is actually pretty well represented in Missouri and for a long time would have voted Democratic in Missouri. These are people who used to be in the fold, blue-collar, working people, white, maybe less educated. The demographic that has been polling well for Trump used to be, in some ways, the heart and soul of the Missouri Democratic Party. I'm thinking a couple decades ago. But what do you make of that? I mean, is Donald Trump onto something?
Well, we've got to do a better job making the case to those voters and all voters that that we offer the best path forward for the country and for their lives. And obviously, having lost those voters over the years is a problem, and we need to do better. But I will say, you know, Donald polls pretty well among them in these Republican primary contests. I think you start looking at polling from just the general electorate and the general voters, I think he does pretty poorly. And in fact, I'll go ahead and predict right now, I think if he's their nominee, and I think he will be, I think we win Missouri at the presidential level handily.
Wow, that's a big prediction.
I know. We've got predictions about SJR 39, about Donald Trump getting the nomination, about the outcome of the November elections. It's a big day here on State House Blend.
Going purple again.
Yeah, I think it'll be a big victory for whether it's Hillary or Bernie. I think it would be a big victory.
All right, one last sweep around the table, and that means Barb Shelley. Anything else from you today?
Yeah, prescription drug monitoring, you know, it's a big issue. And what are the chances for Missouri finally joining the rest of the 49 states and getting a prescription drug monitoring program this year?
Gosh, I hope so. So, you know, I think that says it all. 49 other states have already done this. Yet again, Missouri is lagging behind. You know, just this week, we had a very narrowly tailored medical marijuana bill that only folks who are literally on their deathbed in hospice would get access to medical marijuana. And even that failed because of this notion that it was just too dangerous. We just can't. Mm-hmm. We can't do it. But the stats are clear. We have zero deaths in this country per year from overdosing on marijuana. Zero. This is according to the CDC, the organization that governmental organization that tracks this. We have over 17,000 deaths per year from illicit narcotics like heroin and cocaine.
In Missouri.
No, this is across the country.
Across the country.
Over 17,000 per year. We have over 26,000 deaths per year from legal prescription drugs, opioids and painkillers and everything else. So again, zero from marijuana, 16,000 from all the illicit drugs like heroin and cocaine combined. And then 26,000 plus from legal prescription drugs. Mm-hmm. It is clear, if you look at the numbers, which one of these is the biggest problem. And yet, we still can't get to a point where we have a basic framework in place to regulate prescription drugs that are killing thousands of our citizens. But when it comes to something like a very narrow medical marijuana bill, something that zero people overdose on a year, again, according to the CDC. We can't even get that done. So it's a very frustrating thing. We ought to be able to look at numbers and make priorities based upon them. And here again, we're failing. Are we going to pass the bill? I don't know. I mean,
there's bills in the House and the Senate that need to be reconciled. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. And there's still strong opposition to it. So there are folks who are afraid of a government intrusion into the prescription drug world. But so I don't know. I don't know what to predict in terms of whether it's going to get across the finish line. I certainly hope it does. I think it would make a lot of sense. But doesn't seem like what makes a lot of sense always happens, unfortunately.
No, it doesn't.
And there maybe is the bottom line for today's State House Blend. Barb Shelley, a journalist, writer, friend of the show, thanks so much for being here today.
Absolutely.
And Representative John Carpenter, Democrat from Gladstone, thanks for being here today.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure.
And as perhaps your colleagues have warned you, we always end the show by trying to get to know you a little better. by hearing your favorite song, or at least the song that you think we should end on today. Give us your musical selection, John.
Well, I was going to do Prince in honor of Prince, and I do love the Prince.
I think the odds on here were that like 95% sure you were going to choose Prince.
I was going to. I had it all picked out, but I think I'm going to go. I think I'm going to go with my original choice. Although, still shout out to the career of
noted
of the Prince. And I'm going to do some CCR, and we're going to do Fortunate Son.
Fortunate Son. There it is. Always a good choice. That's a winner.
I'm
just a little sorry we're not going with Prince, but yeah.
I do love the Prince.
And Creedence Clearwater Revival. It is. John, thanks so much for being here. Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can find us on iTunes or on kcur.org/statehouseblend. If you use Twitter, John Carpenter does not, but that's a good way to keep up on the show. Barb, what's your Twitter handle?
It's just at B Shelley, S-H-E-L-L-Y.
I am at PTS Brian. You can follow my co-host Sam Zeff at Sam Zeff. And when we tweet about the show, we use the hashtag Statehouse Blend. You can find a shorter version of this program on the air on Tuesday mornings as part of Up to Date at 11 a.m. on KCUR. Also this week, don't forget to mark your calendar for Statehouse Blend Live. It's KCUR's podcast party on Thursday, May 19th at the Westport Flea Market there in the Buffalo Room. I'll be there with two Missouri legislators and burgers and beer and a live recording of the podcast. The whole audience will be our citizen guest, so come be part of it. You can get more information soon at kcur.org. Any other thoughts or to be on the show as one of our citizen guests, shoot me an email. I'm Brian at kcur.org. Brian Ellison, see you next time.